Look, O mighty one, our sacrifice begins. We commence.
Spellbird, a podcast about the Dungeon Crawl Classics role-playing game. It's time to party like it's 1974.
It's impossible to keep up with all the great stuff being put out for Dungeon Crawl Classics RPG. It seems like every day has a new barrage of Kickstarters, Goodman Games announcements, and other hot rumors. But what the heck? I figured we might review some of our favorite projects and get the word out, since the abundance of content for DCC is something that makes our community great. I'm Judge Julian, and with me today is Judge Jen.
Hello, guys.
And Judge Jeffrey with one F.
Jeffrey with one F, Jeffrey.
And you're listening to Spellburn. And with that, we're going to go right on to Tavern Talk.
Welcome, friends. Good to see you.
I only had one drink to calm my nerves.
Innkeeper, a drink of your most expensive.
Tavern Talk.
Well, here we are, bellied up to the bar in our favorite tavern, Job's Place. And, I'm just going to ask Jeff if you have anything to tell us first.
I ain't got a damn thing.
Well, okay. Then, Jen, what do you got?
Well, that was a heck of a tavern talk there, Jeff. I appreciate the meat of your subjects.
Way to give us something to respond to and really play off of.
Hey, I'm working it.
I can tell you about my final presentation and my two final papers I'm currently working on.
And Jen, yes. Judge Jen, how are you doing today?
I actually got to play DCC last weekend. Oh my gosh. And what's better is that Bob and I both got to play because somebody else ran it. It was pretty amazing. One of our new recruits from Free RPG Day, Scott Hickerson, he's about an hour away from us, but totally worth just kind of taking a day off, excuse me, especially after the shit show that has been this month. Yeah, absolutely necessary. And that kind of sparked the fire again and got me back into enjoying what I do with the hobby. So back to work for me, but
for fun.
Yeah.
But what did you play?
We went into the Sunken Pits, I believe. The first Purple Sorcerer one?
Oh, yeah, the Sunken City?
Jonas Grok?
No.
Yes, no. Somewhere in there. Huge apologies to John Marr.
Perils of the Sunken City of Jonas Grok of Nimblebrook's Tavern Pantry.
Oh, you're terrible. And here we're supporting third-party guys.
Yeah. So third-party products. I know it's the Sunken City Omnibus the product that it is currently in. I don't know exactly which part of it that we played through, which adventure part. I know that he gave us funnel characters, but other than that, I didn't say, hey, is that like book two that we're starting on? Are we starting at the very beginning?
So it was a funnel.
It was a funnel. We kind of finished. We're going to have to go back to it to complete it. So it'll be like a mini campaign. But the amount of work that he put into it and like research and whatnot, it went really well. We had fun.
What did he research?
He's one of those very much like I was, especially at the beginning, where I have to read everything, make notes about the, you know, he'd turn a page in the book and there's another series of post-it notes for things that he has to remember. And yeah, my heart goes out to him because I'm totally that way.
Yeah. Got it.
And I actually ran that adventure back in the day, and I'm especially embarrassed that I can't think of the proper title for it right now.
You well, should be.
it's gosh, guys, we got Google right here, right?
I'm going to stick with the omnibus as long as I can say that word today.
Yeah, it's Perils of the Sunken City, but I'll put it in the show notes, and we'll, of course, we'll put the omnibus in the show notes too.
So there, I actually got to talk about DCC today.
Ha-ha, that's pretty good.
What about you, Julian?
Well, I've had a pretty good solid 10 days or 2 weeks or something since our last recording. We went to New York City for our 20th anniversary with the other Judge Jen, or as I sometimes call her, the real Judge Jen, or maybe the really...
She's just judgy, perhaps.
The really judgy Jen or something.
Yeah. But
anyway, we got to... One of the fun things was we got to meet up with some DCC folks there, not gaming-wise, but we just all had lunch on whatever Thursday that was. Went out to a nice little Chinese place. And Gabe Meister and Jonathan Perkel and Eric Edel. I'm not exactly sure if his last name is Adele or Edel or something. But anyway, really nice guys. Had gamed with them and met them at cons and so on. Gabe, I've gamed with a ton. It was really fun to just see him in a non-con and chit-chat. And the other judge, Jen, was with me. And we had a terrific Chinese lunch. And it was really fun. And maybe Jonathan Perkel will join us for a future Spellburn. You never know. After a lot of playtesting hell, we got back into the saddle for the City of the Damned campaign and ran session 14 yesterday, in which there was a burrowing mining in sewer tunnels was the end goal of the session. They were really just trying to get somewhere so they could take up their mining project in the sewer tunnels. And so that was pretty fun. That's been really a fun campaign, and looking forward to trying to kind of keep that going with a lot of other stuff going on over the next few months. That is it for me.
Okay.
All right. I think it's time to head on over and summon one lonely email.
I call upon the flame to summon you.
I will deliver the message for me.
I came here to give you these facts.
Summon email.
Well, here we are with the really empty mailbag. Hint, hint, hint. Why don't you reach in there, Jeff, and pull whatever one thing you can find out?
All right. I'm digging into this bag. I'm scraping the very bottom of it. And here's one we have from John once again. He had this one sent to us by Black Albatross just the other day. Actually, October 29th. So I guess that was quite a few days ago, but still. It says here, let me unfurl this. I take some inspiration from the Witcher series, the movie Monster Squad, Dwarf Fortress, and generic fairy folklore. As far as weapons with different material types go, I like to add... Oh, I think the subject line is missing. I think the subject line was saying that this was comments on our vampires, witches, and werewolf episode.
Yeah, yep.
So I was missing some context here. As far as weapons with different material types go, I like to add a +1 die type. He likes to go up the die chain to the damage type of the weapon if it is especially effective against that creature type. Vampires, werewolves, and undead I consider to be under some kind of curse, so silvered or blessed weapons get an additional bump on the die chain. Fairies take +1 die chain damage from iron weapons, etc. For zombies, skeletons, and similar undead, unless they're taking damage from a blessed or silver weapon or something that destroys the body like fire or magic, I like to have each hit they take cause a body part to fall off, and the body part gets its own turn/action to support with the fight. That's kind of fun. I also think they could be used as machine parts in fleshcraft contraptions, horseless carriages, clockwork mechanisms, complex computing systems, bureaucrats, etc. For werewolves or were creatures, I do let normal weapons deal damage, but like in Monster Squad, if they get blown up with dynamite, they just congeal back together after a certain amount of time, unless they've taken enough damage from silvered or blessed weapons. In addition to were creatures spreading their curse through bites, I also like the idea of having this condition being passed on persons as a curse from gods or demons for committing great blasphemy or some offensive deed. Maybe even a cleric that has gained too much disapproval and needs to prove themselves to remove the curse. Vampires, I would have regenerate similar to werewolves unless they take enough damage from silvered or blessed weapons, instead of draining levels or experience points. I would have them drain personality points from their with their gaze and stamina points with their blood-sucking bite. If your personality gets drained to below 3, you are under the thrall of the vampire. If your stamina gets drained below 3, you appear to be dead, but will arise in 1 week's time as the vampire thrall. So that is his email. Quickly, I would like to say that I think there's a lot of really great stuff in here. My favorite bit is the part about lycanthropy and vampirism being given as a curse from the gods. I'm obsessed with an old TV show called Dark Shadows. It was a soap opera that was on ABC from 1966 to 1972. And I've been to Dark Shadows conventions and I have photos of me with actors. I went on a Dark Shadows cruise a few years ago.
But wow. Anyways,
I know, I'm such a nerd.
What?
This is real. Another side of Jeff you're not aware of. But in Dark Shadows, the reason why Barnabas is a vampire is because Angelique the witch cursed him with vampirism. So I'm a fan of that style of vampirism. That's all I have to say.
So in Terror of the Stratosphene that we'll talk about later, there is like a weird hybrid half fiendish half human person that really even alluding to shocked me slightly because but I think a dark that cruise I think has actually shocked me more than that. I'm just like, really? It's been a long time. Okay, anyway. That's all super cool stuff from John, and I think that's really interesting stuff. I love the idea of the severed parts, you know, flopping around and attacking and stuff. And the die chain stuff is, you know, pretty right in line with that kind of thing. I thought of that episode recently because I was going over my City of the Damned notes and I had a monster in there. Spoiler alert, stop listening, Karns, where where they suck a level like old school vampires, but like ability drain, you recover once a day. You recover one level per day, so you can be drained, but you do recover them. So I just thought that was kind of fun.
That's a little weird.
Yeah,
I absolutely love the effects of the vampire, the bite versus the gaze. That fits right in line with even Vincent Price. I'm not sure how I feel about the parts congealing and getting back together after a certain amount of time. That's a little too AD&D troll for me, because with that, the minute we saw them, we knew, oh, we need fire. And while that would be a surprise for these things to reconglomerate, you know, the first time you ran across them, from then on out, anytime you have that critter in your campaign, players are going to know. And so I would say maybe one or two werewolves have that kind of ability per se. A lack of death throes, if you will.
I feel like I'm thinking of another DCC adventure, but isn't there an adventure published where parts of a monster have been separated into different, like different kinds of boxes that have been locked away to keep
Abbot
it
of from- the Woods?
Maybe.
Yeah, I think that's the first one that came into my mind too. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
But there's specifically artifacts in that.
Okay. Cool.
At least that's the one I'm thinking of.
Very good. Well, here's where I say We appear to be out of emails. I looked through the inbox and I couldn't find any. So, and this one is from late October. So it's not, it hasn't been a ton of time. We also are due to drop an episode right now, but we need your emails. So send us some emails, or you could even pop them to me and Jeff and Jen on MeWe, or tweet to them at us, all that stuff. Send us some freaking emails, people. We're dying. We need them. We need your input. We take it. When you email us, we think you love us. Don't tell me that's wrong. Just email us.
And Julian, if they would like to email us, how can they go about doing that?
They can find my business card that still talks about G+. Oh, no, wait.
I love how Julian is stalling while he finds out what our email address is.
It's band at spellburn.com. Yeah.
That's the band. Yes.
The band at spellburn.com.
Spellburn.com. That is our email address. Please send us some emails. I'll say it later just to be annoying. And with that, let's move on over to our mighty deeds for the show.
Let the combat begin! To the death!
Why, behold, our hero.
Huh, so you want to play rough, eh? We'll take this!
Mighty deeds.
All right, so here we are in Mighty Deeds, and as I threatened last time when Judge Jen put the kibosh on my second mini review of the episode.
We had mail to go through back then.
Well, that's true. Yes. So we are going to do mini reviews, a whole show of mini reviews, three each, and off we go. We're going to keep them pretty short so they're not long, boring book reports. If you hate this, let us know. If you love it, let us know. We can certainly do a lot more. Rules of engagement up front. I'm not going to talk shit about people or their products too much because I wouldn't put a bad product on. There's really not a lot of bad products out there, but I wouldn't put one on here because there's too much good stuff out there to bother with bad stuff. So I'm just not going to do that. I'm not going to bother reviewing stuff I don't like. I don't have a star system, although I did think about what it would be, like 3 out of 5 wands.
Well, we've already kind of, the history of Spellburn has the fumble, miss, hit, and crit.
Patron bond section.
We could say, most of my stuff is going to be a hit or a crit, but we could say that at least. I'm not going to bring fumbles on here, I don't think. I'm not sure that I've ever read it. Well, anyway.
What about the fact of not reviewing stuff we don't like?
Right. Well, and you guys may totally disagree with me, and you may be calling stuff fumbles left and right. Like, we haven't worked this out together, so they may totally pull the rug.
I'm just picking people I don't like and tearing them down. That's all I'm doing this episode.
As a disclaimer, I think the primary reason that we're not doing stuff we don't like is because if we don't comment on someone else's review, it's just that we haven't had a chance to review it ourselves yet, individually.
Yep.
And also, our community is just awesome, and most of the stuff they put out is awesome, and most of the stuff that we're going to want to talk about is probably stuff that we like and we want people to check out.
Exactly. One thing I will do is I'll try to give a really, I think the benefit of this is to give a fair assessment of the product and tell you what it has and what it doesn't have and who I think would really dig it and who might not dig it that much so that you get something out of it, even though it's not me talking about the quality type thing. So
do what you want to do, man.
All right. First up is Bronx Beasts by Dan Stevie. Woohoo! This is the first one on my list because Dan gave me a free copy, kind of a review copy for Spellburn way back in GaryCon of this year, which was back in March.
Disclaimers.
Yes. So thank you, Dan. And by the way, if you give me free stuff, your chance of getting reviewed eventually is pretty good. I think we have proven, although it does take a while. So thank you, Dan. And on to the review. So Bronx Beast is a zine type product. It has a flashy orange cover and it is it's all black and white. It is basically to play like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle type adventures. And so here's where I say I really quite liked this, but I think I'm too young or rather too old to really have a TNNT like fan experience. Like, I think the people that were really into it were all like kind of kids in the late 80s and early 90s. And I was,
they're my age.
Yeah. And I was older. So I'm not in the target demographic probably. However, I still quite liked it. And if I ran it, it would be weird and horrible, but probably not like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. But as I was reading it, I kind of found myself going, I can see sitting down with Trevor and Clint and Carnes and, Matt Farah and whoever at my table and making them into weird mutated animals with katanas and, you know, one's an ostrich and one's a cheetah and one, you know, and all that stuff. And it would be really weird, just freaking strange. And I think you could probably use that without this point of reference. So anyway, there's that. It actually would be pretty fit right in a Nowhere City thing for that matter. That's the great thing about DCC being so compatible. But so it opens with a lot of origin stuff. There are random origins of mutations, and there's a lot of stuff devoted to that, pretty detailed. There's 100 types of beasts. And then there's further customization with what size your beast is and what your form is, how bestial your hands and your looks and your legs and your speech are. So there's a lot of different ways. A lot of it's kind of role-playing fodder, which I liked. There's probably more emphasis in some ways on just free-form role-playing and stuff than outright mechanics, even though there's good detail. At character creation, you get some evolution points that you can spend to advance your hands or speech evolution and make them more human-like if you choose, or you can juice your stats or do other stuff. I really like that he has an armor die in the system, which is actually totally free form. If you have 3 pieces of armor, then your armor die is like +3d. So that was really cool. And it's like you roll one, you go down one piece of armor is done, but it's totally free form. There were no weapons. There were really no classes beyond the kind of base beast class. So an ostrich is the same as a duck, is the same as a platypus. But you have all those customizations about your form and stuff. Okay, I'm over time. We didn't do the timer, so I'm in power mode now. I'm in beast mode, Brendan LaSalle beast mode. Here we go. There is a sort of a Lankmar healing surge thing that they can do because there are no clerics really. So that it's not exactly Lankmar, but spend luck to boost your to do a little healing. There are beast checks where the judge can compel you with a fleeting luck token to obey your nature, which I thought was sort of like compels and fate and is a really cool role-playing thing. And there's, of course, fur burn, where a beast can burn their mental stats to juice your rolls to be more beast-like, right? And then culminating with bestial freak out, where you can spend luck, describe your animal freakiness, get your freakiness on, and then get a +1 die up the chain for your action for each luck you spent. So you can be like, I'm going all full platypus on this guy. I'm freaking out, quacking and flapping my flippers, and you know, then +2, I'm burning 2 luck, and I'm +2 dice up the chain. So I just think this could be a freaking blast. I mean, I'm sure it's going to be a little weird for some people, but good job, Dan. I think this is this could be fun for Ninja Turtle fans and for weirdos like me. That's it.
So I would say this sounds awesome. I have Bronx Beast myself, and I think it's great. I really want to play it. And also, Julian, if you weren't doing this zine for this episode, this absolutely would have been the top of my list of things that I wanted to review for this.
Oh, funny.
It's such a cool product.
Yeah, no, it's really cool. And there's a lot of, you know how DCC is, the rules are in the class. And so I know it sounds kind of complicated, but most of those rules are really just part of the sort of one flavor beast class that you have right there. Anyway, it's pretty neat. I don't know. I could see myself running this either at a con or maybe doing a you know, maybe even just taking these classes in with other stuff. So, Judge Jen, you are up next. Now, I chose all weird setting books. And Jen, did you pick all adventures?
No, I've got okay. So the first one on my list is actually, and two out of three of them are third party still. The first one on my list is part of Daniel J. Bishop's Campaign Elements series. Mm. It's Silent Nightfall, which incidentally was the very first one that I ever playtested back in like late 2013. So it does hold a special spot, but I don't feel like it's ever gotten featured, if that makes sense. I never hear about anybody running it. Hmm. And I mean, it's put together in a way that each of the areas is short enough to be played through in a single session. But that doesn't mean that each area is limited to a single session. You could totally campaign it. You could have it as a recurring venue, if you will. Basically, the premise being, you know, there's often periods of greater or lesser magical influence in the world. Millennia ago, during a period of reduced magical activity, there was a nuclear power station at this location. And when magical influences began to spread once more, the nuclear core became unstable. So that kind of tells people, oh, it might be sci-fi. You guys know how little sci-fi I like in my fantasy peanut butter, right? The peanut butter chocolate mix. I don't normally go for the sci-fi bent, but I will say that if you have any sort of interest in something like, is it Changeling Earth? Empire of the East sort of feel?
Yeah.
Fantasy version of this.
Hmm. Hmm.
I mean, the whole thing starts out in kind of a wrecked village. I want to say wrecked, but more of an emotionally wrecked village. The children have a nursery rhyme. Silent nightfall, now to bed. A rushlight to ward your way. Hush now, child. Cry not, child. They listen to find their prey. And that's just part of it. So I don't want to spoil the whole entire thing here. You know, if you dig into what's the biggest threat here? Well, possibly a demon, possibly something crawling in the shaft, possibly tetanus. There's rules for tetanus. I absolutely adore this part. There's demonic radiation. So there's additional results if you spellburn. Our last episode, Jeff, I mentioned those fungus zombies, the things you could turn into if exposed to a particular source. Uh-huh. And that source can be found here. There's also an artifact somewhere below near this complex that should you desire to do a campaign about it, you could lead up to it for years. And it whispers to elves. But Daniel Bishop also includes the fact that elves are susceptible to damage here because of the iron, because of the metal, because of everything underground. Mm. And that is actually reflected as penalties on the die chain.
Mm.
So add to that there's so many aberrations and weird, creepy bird things. And yeah, it's something that I could probably run another campaign on. Just that itself. So it's definitely part of the campaign elements.
Could you it sounds like you could probably just drop it right into MCC or Umerica or something too.
I think it'd be a really great way to move your characters from DCC to the world of MCC. Like if you start with the fantasy characters, because you really want, it sounds weird, but you really want something that's elven or at least susceptible mm-hmm. to some of the aspects here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think that really increases the flavor.
Mm, cool.
So there's my little 4-minute book report.
Excellent.
Any questions, kids?
Mm-hmm.
No questions, only now I'm a little embarrassed that one of my later ones is also going to be a Daniel J. Bishop's Campaign Elements booklet.
Guys,
why embarrassed?
Well, you know, I like to have a variety. I mean, if we're doing a show like this and we're only doing 9 things, it would be very easy to pick 9 totally different things. And I should have paid a little bit more attention to when you guys posted what you were doing.
Yeah.
It's all good. I ended up changing my third thing, anything.
I think, he does great stuff and he's one of our best commenters. And needs to be a future guest. So I think he's, I think it's well worth it to
guest too.
Double up on Daniel Joseph. Okay. Jeff, Judge Jeff, you were up.
All right. So when I was thinking about three things that I might want to cover on this show, I decided it would be fun for me to do one that I had heard nothing about or hadn't heard of prior to even being assigned this project. One that I've had in print that's just been sitting around that I honestly haven't read, and this will be a great excuse for me to actually read it and digest it. And then one that I've actually experienced in gameplay either as the judge or the or a player. So that's how I'm moving forward with this project. And the very first one that I selected is in the vein of ones that I had never heard of before. And I know that on Daniel J. Bishop's blog, Raven Crow King, he's got his list of all of the DCC products. So I was scrolling through that and looking for something that I didn't know anything about and clicking around. And that's when I found the website knightsinthenorth.com. That's K-N-I, knightsinthenorth.com. And they've got a bunch of free PDF zines on their website. And there's one called Knight's Moot Number One, Magic Items, 16 Bone Daggers. And this one has a bunch of different contributors. It's got Patrick Lane, somebody named AMP. I don't know what that stands for.
It's Arimati Paipo.
Yeah.
He's in Finland, I believe.
Yeah.
And he is a longtime DCC fan.
Yeah.
Very cool. And Villa Rakila, Tim Deshane came up with one. Marcus Majoma. I know I'm butchering these people's names and I apologize. There's even one by Daniel J. Bishop. So that, you know, we're getting lots of DJB here today. One by Giles Othen, one by Danny Prescott, and one by Michael Markey. But there are two on here. I mean, it's a random table. So you roll a D16 and you see what kind of bone blade you get. But there were two on here that really, really caught my eye. One of them is the Char Gnarl. And this one is written by AMP himself. And basically the Char Gnarl is this little bone dagger that you find that is actually, it consists of still living remnants of an alien creature from beyond space and time. And it desperately desires to regain its full form again. So as you use this little bone dagger and you kill things with it, every time you make the killing blow, the dagger gets bigger and more powerful. And finally, it'll get to a point where it becomes so big and powerful, it has now become the Char Gnarl once again, and it's now a monster that you now have to deal with. So I thought that was a really cool item that you could go ahead and throw into your game. The other one I really liked is one by Tim Deshane. And Tim's is, it's very short and sweet, but it's a very cool idea. And his is the Fey Skean. It's F-E-Y-S-K-E-A-N. So Fey Skean. I'm not sure. But basically, it is an elven blade. And I like it because elven here feels very broken sword elven, not Tolkien elven. And it's this strange kind of ritual dagger that only has one use. And the one time that you use this dagger and you attack something with it, both the blade and the thing you attack are going to disappear forever and go to some other place. Nobody knows where they go, but they go somewhere else. They're no longer your problem.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's cool.
Yeah. So that is the first item that I'm recommending. So just again, that's knightsinthenorth.com. And this is the PDF zine, Knight Moot Number One. And as far as I can tell, all these PDFs are free.
Yeah, very cool. Obviously, I'm going to link that in the notes. I'll be linking all this stuff. And I know that Ari his name?
Arimati.
He is
hyphenated.
He puts tons and tons of cool stuff out there periodically. I think when he's dropping these things. So yeah, it's always super, really good looking stuff. So thank you, Arimati, for doing that.
And it's a beautiful website.
Yeah, I was just following the link and looking at that. He's got art on there and everything. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right. I'm up next. Judge Julian, would you like to tell us about Phantasmagoria? Yes, I would. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Okay, I'll tell you about it.
I guess.
This is from Chance Phillips and Apollyon Press. And I think he might be a UK guy if I, I'm not 100% sure. Anyway, it was edited.
I know he comes up in my Facebook people you might know all the time.
Oh, there you go. And he was edited. It was edited by a guy whose initials are JC and
okay.
Jen Krinkman.
And yeah. It's not Jesus Christ. But anyway.
Perhaps Crater.
Maybe. So it's advertises itself as Sword and Planet. Although when I looked, I mean, I think it's more planets. Because I was thinking it might be more John Carter, kind of Eric John Stark type thing, but I find it to be more, a little more spelljammery, but with kind of a gritty Warhammer craziness. Or, and then maybe like what I imagine Starfinder would be like if it was fun. But
no.
Oh, I said I wasn't going to be negative. But anyway, but. So there's a heavy magical thing, but there's space travel and so on. So there's five new classes. Both of the two things that I'll talk about, the other things, are sort of strangely similar, even though I didn't intend them to be, you know, to pick two things that are similar. They both have sci-fi elements and so on. But this one doesn't have a lot of setting info. It gives you a bunch of classes and stuff to play with and stuff like that. And then I think we're left to kind of drop it in our own stuff or, you know, sort of just make up the setting.
Issue two, maybe?
Yeah, I haven't even. I know issue two might have just come out, and I have not seen it. I've saw it being talked about or just barely advertised, I think so. But I don't know anything about it. It has five new classes: automatons, captains, gremlins, Jovians, and star princes. And they're all pretty interesting. The captain is not like a big mercenary fighter like you might think, he's more like a cerebral guy. The Star Prince is actually one of the weirder classes I've ever seen. They are stars given form, and they only mature into sort of a humanoid form in the last part of their life cycle. So they begin play at sixth level because, as it says, between first and fifth level, a star is a star. So it can't join an adventuring party. But at sixth level, it becomes a star prince and can join an adventuring party. And it, as it sort of says, probably wanted to join a party around sixth level. You know, yeah.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, it's a pretty neat idea. There are some fun weapons in there, nuclear rifles, chainswords, and that kind of stuff, and some cool sci-fi equipment, sci-fi armor. There's the list of starting occupations, including elf, halfling, and dwarf ones that the setting would sort of support, it infers. And there are spaceship rules, which I won't go into a lot, but there's a pretty good, I think it's comparable to like what they did in Crawljammer. You know, the spaceship has three stats, then there's a ship type, an engine type, weapons and armor and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I would say that it's kind of a toolbox rather than a setting, but there's a lot of neat stuff in there, and it has a frickin' beautiful color cover. Sword and Planet Zine, Phantasmagoria number one. Aren't you glad we're using visual cues instead of an egg timer sound at this point, folks? I don't know. Maybe not.
We'd be gone forever.
We'd be gone forever. All right.
So that sounds, yeah, I was going to say, it sounds similar to what Crawljammer and even Crawling Under a Broken Moon did. They give you some basic stuff to run with in issue one, and then issue two expounds upon that. And later you get, you know, your own adventure to work with.
It's kind of like that, but in Crawljammer, they strung Tim strung the classes out across like five or six issues, right?
That's true, yeah.
And this one, they're giving you, bang, here's a bunch of classes. I mean, you could run a whole game. Huh. You just don't have a lot of setting info, so you'd be making up the world and everything. But you know what? If it was me, I'd be doing that anyway. So why not, actually? This is what I pay them for, right? Give me the classes.
Nice.
All right, Judge Jen,
The second one I picked is another adventure, but again, not super well known, and kind of a shame because it's by alumnus Job Bittman.
Job.
Called Glypcario's Gambit. Originally, it was number 80.5 on the DCC adventure chain. Now it's like number 3 of 7 within Chaos Rising, that compilation.
And Jen, why does that name sound so familiar?
I know, right? Total props to Job because, you know, Glypcario. Lankmar, maybe? Now that I put it together with the actions of Glypcario, Kistamerces. Things kind of shuffle in and make sense and gives me the shudders, right? The other fun part on this is that the temple that's under attack that you are sent to go relieve, essentially, is Mount Teish. And Teish is the Greek goddess of fortune and luck, which ties in perfectly with that patron being the three fates. So I thought that was a nice little double play on words there. This was originally one of two PDF adventures that were emailed out to road crew people between 2015 and 16. So they weren't even in print for probably a year or so after that. And then it was just in black and white, you know, 8x10 modules. I would call this an adventure in reverse. Because as soon as you're sent to the place that you need to be, you fight what appears to be the big, huge bad. And appearances aren't always what they seem. So up a mountainous path, all these really, really bizarre animals, because, well, Job, there's a super challenging puzzle, devious one might say, that leads to a very powerful reward. There's a game-changing magic weapon involved here, so heads up to any newbie to running campaigns like myself, like I was. This thing kind of wrecked a few things. Yeah. Damn it. But once up that mountain, the gate to the temple area is still by far one of my favorite visuals presented to me within the form of a DCC module. It's not like a web stretches across an entire clearing. It's faces, because that's what they used to be, is faces. And the wording for it is just exquisite, I have to say. And of course, the party is surrounded by a bunch of identical creatures towards the end. I would say make them look like what you want them to, and you can fit it into your own campaign, and be sure to use the hit point tracker on the back. That's all I can really say there. Oh, and don't forget to try the outhouse. So that would be my advice for players on that end. The conclusion is left pretty much up to the judge, so it's super simple just to have them go back down the mountain or be transported somewhere else, and makes it really easy to put into your story.
Sounds great.
I read this a long time ago, and I remember that it's kind of in reverse, that there's a weird time element to it or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Does it feel like it drops off, like the front part is the climax and then it kind of tails off, or does it still have a kind of a boss at the end?
I think it's meant to keep people guessing. Because there may be more than one encounter with aspects of that boss. And yeah, that, without going into like spoilerific detail, there's no tetanus. So it's a little bit more friendly in that aspect.
Oh, jeez.
All right, Jeff, what do you have for us next?
So I have another edited by JC product here, Mr. Jarrett Crater. I've got Country Crawl Classics.
Oh, man.
And in my hand, I've got the Ashcan edition. So
Ashcan edition?
Yes, the Ashcan edition. And here is the little intro to Country Crawl Classics. It's the year 21XX, and all you've got is a whole bunch of misery. Canada's been nuked, and there's a wall to the south, and the Midwest is a dirt farm. You and your inbred, good-for-nothing kin have learned to subsist on Fundo and mutant alligator meat, all the while sucking down booze and eating whatever pills you can find. Elvis is everywhere, rhinestones are all the rage, and every honky-tonk across the blasted hellscape of the USA has a jukebox in the corner playing another Somebody Done Somebody Wrong song. Saddle up your electric horse, if you got one, that is, and ride out into the future that is the past of 1970s America in all its horrible glory. Welcome to Country Crawl Classics. And in Country Crawl Classics, it does the thing that I love, which is that you can have a character in like 15 seconds. So aside from rolling up stats, which we're not going to do, you roll a occupation, mm-hmm. you roll a two pieces of gear, a name, and two miseries. So Jen, you what? Are a honky-tonk woman.
Yeehaw.
You've got a bulletproof hat that you cannot remove.
Okay.
Nice.
And a headless robo horse.
Sweet.
And your name is Frank Outlaw Graham. So Frank Hell Outlaw yeah, Graham, the honky tonk woman with your mm-hmm. bulletproof hat and your headless robo horse. So that's your character, Jen. Julian.
What about the miseries?
Oh, and your miseries. That's right. And you've got two miseries. So Jen.
Was this written by Wayne and Doug?
I'll go over all that in just a sec.
Okay.
So, Jen, your family done disown you because you broke traditions, and your hell-raising buddies are dead because of you.
I'm feeling a little called out here, Jeff.
And now, Julian, you are a good-hearted woman, and this good-hearted woman's got a hobo detector. And I roll a D4 to see what your hobo detector detects.
Look for your the beard. Detector, Look for the beard.
It detects vehicles. And you've also got a hacksaw club sandwich and a kitten.
Aww.
And your name is Randy Hardhead Clinton. Randy Hardhead Clinton, the good-hearted woman.
Wow.
And your miseries are you got trouble with pills and 90 proof. And you got a bad skin condition. So now we've got some characters, and
are we going to live play this?
You basically could.
Let's do it.
And what's going to happen here is you've also got running CCC on the fly. The number one rule is pick an ending. No matter what happens at the end of your allotted time of play, the ending happens and the game is over. Then you pick a starting location. So let's go ahead and roll up a starting location. So we're going to start up in the Piltdown Man evacuation site.
Oh, God.
We'll roll up some shit that happens at dawn. Looks like there's a mutant cock swarm. And then at dusk...
Glad I got my hat.
And then at dusk, everybody wakes up tied up. Now let's roll how this is going to end, no matter what happens. It's going to end why some guy shoots his wife and gets put in prison for something imagined. So that's going to be okay. The adventure. And also in the back of this little booklet, we
now,
have...
Now, are you supposed to disclose that ending?
I don't think so. I think that's just something that you kind of hold in your back pocket. But also, I imagine you can tell them that if you want. And this product, yeah, it was written by Reese Carter, Jarrett Crater, Anthony Fournier, Christian Kessler, Jason Kielbasa, Doug Kovacs, Matthew Schmier, Wayne Snyder, and Noah Stevens. So a lot of the usual suspects that you would imagine would be attached to a fine product like this.
So Wayne Kahn wrote this.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you ever wondered what happens on Wednesday nights, this is pretty much what happens at Wednesday nights.
This is
nights.
Basically it. Yeah.
Is the... Nice. I gotta say, for Randy Hardhead Clinton, she's feeling a little railroaded here by this, ending that I can't change. I think you've taken away my player agency there.
I hate to break this to you, but your husband just done shot you. Sorry, Randy. Game over. So moving on to you, Julian. What's the next? What's the next?
Okay, that was
product
fun.
You're covering.
I think we should Twitch that at some point. I'm just saying.
I'm down.
That's a word.
Maybe mini games will be in the future. We'll do an episode with 4 15-minute mini sessions of something. They have to end in 15 minutes. Okay. I don't know. I'm just spitballing. Okay. Last and weirdest of my items, I've got Terror of the Stratus Fiend that I picked up at Gamehole Con. Really nice looking product. It's in black and white. It has some superlative art, really great line drawing stuff.
Ooh.
And that's pretty fun. And this is by a gentleman named Sean Richer, something like that. I suspect he might also be a UK guy, but I'm not sure. I don't know anything about Sean. This is strangely kind of like Phantasmagoria, as I said, in terms of it being sort of a sci-fi type thing. There's very little setting detail. They say an event called the Drop happened and a bunch of demons came out, and then a bunch of humans came out that were powered by demons, and they'll fight or something. And so it's not exactly very clear. It has a little bit of a Wayne Con kind of thing vibe going, even though those guys aren't involved at all. But some of these other things, the classes come first. So there is a human sat caster who's kind of like a shaman in the MCC game. He has an orbital satellite who gives him power, and then he's basically a wizard that is empowered by praying to like with these weird demon satellites. And the weird thing is there's humans and half humans and aliens, and it's not at all really clear from the very very like two shallow paragraphs of setting detail whether are these guys allies or would you play them fighting each other, or you like whatever, just take them and do whatever you want with them. And you could actually take these and play them with the guys in Phantasmagoria and all be on the same spaceship. It would probably work fine. So there is a half demon street whisperer. And then where it gets really weird is there's a Stratus Fiend Delver and a Stratus Fiend Magistrate, who are two related but different types of physical aliens, like giant 12-foot-tall cyclopses with tentacles and spellcasters. And, it's nutty. There is also weapons and armor, and there's plenty of that stuff in these types of things. One thing I really liked about this particular product is they did a really neat thing where they have some cool weapons that are actually kind of mundane, but then they have a add-on feature list of 20 cool things that you can add to any weapon. So you could randomly roll from column A, okay, I have a dagger, but then your dagger could be incubating a monster that slowly hatches into an alien and attacks something eventually one day. Or that could happen.
Yeah, that's a cool mod.
Yeah, or it could happen to your shotgun or whatever. And there's 20 things like that you can bring on. So there's a new spell called Polyphemon Rage, and there's two full patron write-ups that, again, have a bunch of implied setting type stuff in there. And then there's 7 pretty disturbing whacked out monsters.
How big is this thing, Julian?
It's pretty meaty for a zine size thing. It clocks in at 57 pages. And
that's like Starcrawl big. Yeah.
Well, it's small size, but it's and there's not a ton of art, but the art is really nice in here. I really quite like their drawings. There's super nice detailed line drawings, crazy stuff. If you feel, if you're somebody who really wants somebody to hold your hand and tell you how you're supposed to use this thing and you need to be really comforted through that process, you may not totally dig this thing. But if you just want to jump in and see what kind of crazy stuff is cooking in Mr. Richard's head and pick it up and do with these classes in the patrons and so on what you want to do. I mean, there's implied connections between all these things, but there's just not a lot of detail. So, you know, take it and make it your own, or drop them in your own sci-fi or America or MCC thing, and off you go. It would, I think, and Starcrawl, I think, would work for just fine as well, possibly. So, yeah, that's the Stratosphene.
Awesome.
Woohoo.
And they're made. I don't know if there's more coming out of these, but I'd certainly be looking at these down the road as well.
This sounds like a really cool product.
So I will say Phantasmagoria, I think number two is out, and Bronx Beast also.
I think number three just hit for Phantasmagoria.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Well,
one and two were both at the booth at Game Hall.
Oh, well, duh. Okay, sorry. So Phantasmagoria 2 is out too, and we'll link that. And I think Bronx Beast doesn't have a new one out, but it has a second one planned eventually. So so collect them all, kids.
Okay, so we're pimping third-party products here.
And speaking of collect them all.
Jeff always talks about Appendix N podcast.
Appendix N podcast. If you were a real podcaster like Appendix.
I'll wait. So I try not to cross-pollinate too often, but since Sanctum Media puts out a third-party product with every episode of the Sanctum Sacrorum podcast, I'm throwing number 10 forward. It happened to be the one related to Clark Ashton Smith, The Maker of Gargoyles. So we went over that book in our podcast and tied it into DCC and, you know, detail. And the table of contents for this zine, which, as I may have mentioned, is free. We have a character class, Deep One Halfbreed. That one was submitted to us by Joe Salvador, related to the previous show. And he gives you occupations and transformation tables even. So you can play Deep One Halfbreeds as PCs in your game if you want. That's kind of freaky, right? We also have the gargoyle itself made out as a PC. We've got art in here from Todd McGowan. Ari Mahdi is a real frequent contributor to the Sanctum Sacrorum zine, which is how we know him so well. For monsters, you've got the Graven Gargoyle with very much like the annual. It gives you all sorts of tables, you know, even split between lawful and chaotic alignments for the gargoyle's appearance, because of course each one is unique. And then there's a spell in this one, level 3, called Imbue the Stone, which it's not a fast spell, but it's a turn to cast, but it's got like a lower effect would be to communicate with gargoyles, see who's buried there, you know, what they might know about anything going on around them. And at higher results on the spell, you can create gargoyles, create a masterwork gargoyle, which can communicate with you and will fight if threatened. Just to go into this one a little bit, one of the levels of corruption on the spell is that you perpetually release gravel with each step taken, which of course hinders your stealth related checks. And one of the misfire is your weapon turns the next creature struck into clay, which I always thought could be kind of interesting if you end up hitting a friend instead of a foe. Whoops. But yeah, we get some community sourced art in there as well as Creative Commons. And the link that I'm going to have Julian put on the show notes is to get them, get the zines in bundles based on year. And this one was from 2016, if you are interested. And I think there's over 40 zines available. So yeah, collect them all. They're free. You get stuff like this in each one.
Bah, 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 Sanctum Sacrorum.
I know. She has to bring it up every episode, doesn't she?
Sacrorum, not the Sanctum Sanctorum. We are not Doctor Strange.
I am a Marvel guy. I was just there in Greenwich Village looking for the Sanctum Sanctorum. But
a lot of the material is put forth by the hosts of the show, too. So, like, the Gargoyle class was by David Beatty. Mm. And the monsters were Bob Brinkman and the spell may have been me. So we all have that extra level of homework that we put in after the fact.
It's really, this is really, it's a pretty amazing amount of stuff, like Arimati's stuff that's given away free and done by passionate fans here. So that's pretty cool, guys. Yeah, I appreciate it. I mean, yeah. And look at the friggin' Gong Farmer's Almanac. We should do this whole episode just with the Gong Farmer's Almanac at some point.
Like volume one.
That would be really cool.
Maybe year one.
Well, if each of us just took like three items in there from any Gong Farmer Almanac anywhere, right? Just go like, hey, volume one, chapter four by whomever, you know.
Or we could even make it like a several episode series where each episode we pick a year. Because there's so much meat. I'm good with
that. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we could easily get an episode out of just 1 year between. Yeah.
All right, guys. We have goals for next year. Let's do this.
I love it. So wrapping up this episode, the last one we'll be discussing today is the. Oh, and I forgot to mention that the Country Call Classics one was the one that I had in print that I hadn't had a chance to really properly. But I hadn't had a chance. I mean, I just hadn't properly digested yet. And I'm so glad I did because it's super cool. Yes, Jen?
What differentiates the ashtray version?
Oh, the ashcan version?
Because it's black?
I'm not really sure. I think it's got...
My copy is orange.
Then I guess that's it.
I think the ashcan is usually a little more of a preliminary copy. Isn't that a thing? It's like I don't know. I might be
I'm
wrong.
Not familiar.
I can look. I can Google it while we talk about. But so what's better, Country Call Classics or Dark Trails? Okay,
just different animals. Okay. I think.
No, we'll do a bracket online. We'll do an online Spellburn. We'll get all our friends bracketed and all their products bracketed, and then.
Well, we would also need to put in black powder, black magic.
Okay. Anyway. Off you go, Jeff.
Okay, and our final one is another Campaign Elements by Daniel J. Bishop, and this one is The Black Goat. And this is one that I've experienced in play. Andrew Sternick ran a DCC campaign in New York when I was still living there, and he included this little bit in here. And The Black Goat is a location. It's some competing factions. And it's a patron. And the location is a pass through the mountains. And our two competing factions, the first we have is the Pelis Troth. And the first thing I'd probably do is rename these things because I don't feel like these really come off they don't come off of my tongue. They don't roll off of my tongue easily. But we've got some cool competing races here. So the Pelis Troth, they are these like little fox people. And they're very into selling their wares, and they're like yippy little fox creatures. And then we've got the Mammoth Toth, and they're the arch rivals of the Pelis Troth. And the Mammoth Toth, imagine if Tower of the Elephant were slash fic, and when Conan went to the top of the tower, he found this really like hunky elephant man. That's kind of what the Mammoth Toth are. They've got these big elephant ears, but they're kind of like big hunky muscle dudes. And they're also very, very susceptible to sound. Just the tiniest bit of sound just drives them crazy. So you have to make sure that you're talking nice and quiet around them. They would hate me because I'm very loud and I have a very loud laugh. So as long as you talk nice and quiet around them, then they're cool. They're cool. And they're the ones who are kind of protecting the Black Goat. Now, the Black Goat, imagine, if you will, a centaur, but replace the human part with Baphomet and replace the horse part with a sphinx. And there you have the Black Goat. And here she sits for all of eternity in her little palace atop this little area here, filled with riches.
Are you sure it's a she?
She's got mammaries.
Okay.
But it could be a he with mammaries.
It's a fantasy game. Don't you mean like portray? I mean, we all have mammary. I mean, they're not the glands, right? We have
protruding,
the
protruding. Yes, I'm guessing.
It's got she boobies.
Okay.
It's getting really dangerous on this show right now. I'm just the danger. I am so the glad danger meeting is live cast. The meter's like.
Yeah, she's got lovely lady lumps. what? That's a song.
Yeah.
My lumps.
Yay.
My lumps. Isn't that, or is it my humps? Now I don't remember. Is it humps or lumps?
Oh, thank God. So there's this book, Jeff.
Anyways, yes. So you distracted me with that. And she is a patron, and she's the patron of silence and decadence. And she's so silent, in fact, that she is physically incapable of making a noise. If she were to walk up with a big old club and walked up to the DCC gong and gave it a big old hit, it wouldn't make a single sound. That's how silent she is, which is a reason why these quiet people like her so much and worship her. But anyway, she can become your patron. You can try to bribe her with riches and fineries for some magical secrets, perhaps. So I don't know. It's kind of a cool, fun thing to drop into your campaign world. And I don't know. I like it. And Andrew Cernick made it very fun. That's it. End of story.
So did you play specifically in that area?
We were traveling from one area to another, and just like this is designed to be, it was just kind of a dropped in thing in the middle.
Awesome.
Yep.
How did you end up interacting with her? Or did you?
Oh yeah, we definitely did. We went up there, and I did become, I did end up taking her on as a patron. But I also had the King of Elfland as my patron, and the two of them were arch rivals.
Of course.
So I had two competing patrons who were not really happy with my taking on patronage with both of them. But I moved out of the city before we could really have that come back to bite me in the butt.
It kind of it reminds me of that part of MCC, I think in the Shaman class, where it says, the judge should do everything possible to make sure the shaman gets multiple patrons, three or four, if at all possible.
Well, yeah, because then they can compete, or he has to compete for their favor. Because,
yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, and here, Julian sent us a message. Ashcan editions are normally giveaways at conventions or stores, printed on cheaper stock paper, usually in black and white, kind of like a work in progress. Since they don't produce as many as they would in a regular run of an issue, they sometimes become quite the collectible.
Ooh.
Nice.
Now, that was...
This is going right on eBay.
That was some...
20 years from now.
That was some helpful knob on some message board, but on Wiki, the more official historical comment was... an Ashcan comic is an American comic book, an Ashcan comic, but it's originally created to establish trademarks for potential titles and not intended for sale. So they'd be released, but not officially, which is then how they later sort of morphed into that other meaning, I think. But it was, you'd release it and trademark it, right? And then, so.
And also, I will say there is nothing comic about Country Club Classics. It is very serious.
Oh, I mean, if you know those guys, you know that they get up in the morning, they put on their shirt sleeves and their tie, their three-piece suit vest. You know, they walk out and catch the metro right on schedule to their jobs as bankers and lawyers and insurance salesmen, and they make the world safe for capitalism. You know, it's great.
And so, they also like to finally debate what the oh God, ignore me. My brain's tired. My joke fell flat. Goodbye. It's been nice talking to you all.
And on that note, since as you can tell, I'm probably too sober, I think we'll wrap it up here. Once again, I will say email us at theband@spellburn, because we need your emails very much. We love you. Emails make us feel loved. I think I already said that. I also want to congratulate Clint Bahati for a very successful Necromolds Kickstarter, which just started a couple days ago.
Ooh, yay.
So he
already funded?
It funded in 12 hours. I think Sweet. He's in the 70,000 range right now, and cool. He's going gangbusters. Wow. We had so much fun watching kids play that in real time, up close and personal with Clayo Vision at GameOldCon. It was super fun. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was really cool. So if it's still going when this drops, I don't know when it'll be out, but go take a look at the Kickstarter and leave us some iTunes reviews and... send us some bumpers if you feel like it. Send us an audio file and say something like, I'm Doug and you suck and you're listening to Spellburn or something like that. You know, even it'd be funnier if you're not Doug and you still say that would be pretty good. I think with that,
we're going to hell. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, with that, I'm out of here. This is Judge Julian. And so game on and, play DCC.
You've been listening to Spellburn. Copyright 2017. Our theme song has been graciously provided by Glitter Wizard. Learn more at glitterwizard.bandcamp.com.